Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Dharmasya hi apavargasya dharmasya hi apavargasya dharmasya hi apavargasya nato atayopakalpate nato Tayo pakalpate nator tayo pakalpate dharmashahi apavagyasya nator tayo pakalpate natasya dharmaikantasya Natasha Dharma Kantasha Natasha Dharma Kantasha Kamo Labhaya Hi Smita Kamo Labhaya Hi Smita Dharmasya Occupational Engagement. He certainly apavargyasya ultimate liberation na not artha end artaya for material gain dharma eka antasya for one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service. It's kind of interesting, this word here, the way it's broken down. Dharma obviously means religious duties or you know the intrinsic nature of a living entity. Eka means one. Anta, asya, of the conclusion or the end. Anta means like the end, generally speaking. So for one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service, it's like it's defining that devotional service is like this is the only conclusion that you can actually achieve in this world. There's nothing else. By saying eka, one, and that's very much the Vaishnava conclusion of devotional service is that there is only one path that you can follow to achieve success. And Lord Chaitanya makes that point. Nastyeva, 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 katiranita. There's nothing else you can do. And he says it three times for emphasis. If we read in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, then at the end of the introduction, Prabhupada quotes from the Gita Mahatmya by Lord Shiva. And there, in that those series of verses. Anyone ever read those verses from the Gita Mahatmya? Very, very nice verses there. Lord Shiva is glorifying the Gita. He's glorifying Krishna, and he says, "Let there be one service, the service of Krishna. Let there be one scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, and let there be one conclusion, devotional service." So again, the point is like there is only one means. Not in this age, in any age, whereby you can achieve success in this life. And that means is through the service of Krishna. You know, we see materialistic person, so many means they conjure up, so many ideas they come up with, and they keep inventing newer and newer things all the time on how to have a happy life. But the problem is, we never see them having a happy life. And how do we understand this? Why? Because they keep inventing newer and newer things to try and get a happy life. So the fact that they're spending so much time inventing things, I get a cup for each hand today. The fact they spend so much time inventing things means that they're not happy with what they have. Because if they're happy with what they have, they'd just be peaceful. There's like that. There's that story of the sage that Arjuna came upon. He was living in this hut in the forest, and the hut had holes in the roof and things. No, actually, no, it wasn't Arjuna. It was a king. the king was asking this sage if he could, this Brahmin, if he could build him a hut, you know, to live in, so he could perform his bhajan. And you know, basically the sage was saying, but I'm only here for a short time, I don't need anything. He was satisfied with what he had. You know, very simple. He had nothing. And for someone who's materialistic, this just is, it makes no sense that someone who has nothing could ever be happy. Because why? They're striving to gain so many different things, to have so many different opulences, computers and cars and houses and wives and husbands, and just the list just goes on ad infinitum. There's so many things that they're aspiring to have. Why? So that they can be happy. But is that true? Are they actually becoming happy? What is the reality? They're not happy. How do we understand this? It's because they keep aspiring for more and more things. They keep making so much hard endeavor. Manasastan indriyani prakatishtani kashati, Krishna says in the Gita. They're working so hard. Prakritishtani, they're struggling, prakriti with the material nature. They're struggling very hard with the material nature. And they're struggling very hard with their senses, which includes, he says, mana shashtan indriyani, the six senses including the mind. They're struggling very hard with these things. It's a very hard struggle for them. And still, they're not satisfied. So this is the situation of people in this world. Yet we see, you know, like in this story, the Prabhupada quotes about this Brahmin sage. He had nothing. And he was just sitting in the forest meditating on Krishna. And then when the king asked him, you know, can I build you a place? He said, I'm only here for a short time. And actually, I can't remember, I think it was like he had as many years as there were hairs on his head or something like that. But actually he was there for a very, very long time. He had a very, very long life, you know, by the dint of his austerities. He had a very, very long life. And yet still he was saying, I'm only here for a short time, it doesn't matter. You know, he wasn't trying to improve himself materially. And there's a very interesting verse in the teachings of Queen Kunti. If you, you know, if you want to study a really interesting section of the Bhagavatam, you study these teachings of Queen Kunti. Prabhupada says that she's a Vaishnavacharya. You know, so it is true that women can become acharyas, but Queen Kunti is very, very, you know, we have Kunti, Janavama, you know, a few great Vaishnavas, Ganga Matuka Swamini. There's a few great Vaishnavas, but you know, keep in mind that they are very great devotees, they're not ordinary. But then Prabhupada says that Kunti is an acharya. And in her teachings, she, what's that verse? It's a really nice verse. Tom Mikinchana Gochara, you know that verse? Finishes Tom Mikinchana Gochara. What's the first line? Edamana Madhavana Navahati Abhidat. So it's something Shruti Shribir. What is it? Yeah, thank you. Janma Aishwarya Shruta Shribir. So Janma, birth, Aishwarya, opulence, Shruta, knowledge, Shri, beauty. Yeah. So she's saying that to Krishna, she's praying to Lord Krishna. She's saying, my dear Lord, you are very easily approachable. But not by those persons who are trying to improve themselves materially. Persons who are after Janma, they want to improve their birth. Because there's so many Vedic rituals you can do to improve your birth. You know, this is like the Karmis, that's essentially what they're trying to do. They're performing the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies to get a better birth. They want to take birth in the heavenly planets, they want to take birth here, there, you know, get a good family, a wealthy family. You know, because it mentions in the Gita, in the sixth chapter, how you can get birth in a wealthy family. You know, one who performs devotional service and the devotional service is incomplete. It says they're born into a family of rich aristocracy. Or Brahmins. Yeah? So, you know, by entering the devotional service, there is some fruitive benefit that comes from that. So some people, they'll do that just to get this good birth. But Kunti's saying, but she says, you can't be approached by these persons. Persons who want to improve their birth. Persons who want more wealth. Because there are rituals you can do. You can worship, you know, Kuvera. There's so many different personalities. You can worship the sun god. You can worship the wife of Shiva. You get a beautiful wife, things like that. You worship the sun god, you get a strong body. So many different things you can do to improve. Janma, Aishwarya, your wealth. Shuta, your knowledge. You know, even you can worship Hayagriva, a form of Krishna, to get greater knowledge in the Vedas. Or you can worship Vach, the goddess of speech, or Saraswati.
Well, you should take temple president.
Hmm. You want to be the temple president? I think the job's already taken. There's so many things you can do, you know, to improve your knowledge. You know, you can worship Vach and she will help you to speak very nicely, for instance. You can worship Saraswati, she'll give you great learning. And Sri, beauty. You know, so many people that want to be beautiful. I mean, you walk down here along the beach and there's this health club down the road there, and people all want to have big bodies, and you see people with the personal trainers on the beach all the time, and they just want to improve their bodily features. Why? So they can attract the opposite sex. So, you know, it's not to attract Krishna. They're just trying to attract the opposite sex, which is, again, implicating them further and further in this material world. So they're struggling very hard to improve their position in this material world. But Kunti says, she says, Tvama Kinshana Gochara, you can only be approached by those who are materially exhausted. That doesn't mean someone who's tired. Yeah? It means someone who has no interest whatsoever. You know, because often devotees, because they stay up late, they get up early, you know, they only sleep a little while, they're often very tired. That is not the secret to success. Because as Krishna, again, he explains in the, what is it, this, I can't remember what chapter, is it the 5th chapter or the 12th chapter? Yukta hara vihara sya yukta chetasa kama sura yukta swapna bodasya yoga bhavati dukkha. He says really clearly that one can mitigate all these material pangs by practicing, you know, he says one who's regulated in their habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, work, can mitigate all material pangs by practicing the yoga system. So we see Prabhupada was extremely regulated. Giving us, of course, he was beyond the rules and regulations because he's actually an Uttamadhikari. He's a lover, you know, a direct lover of Krishna. He had no material inebrieties whatsoever. But he was, you know, because he had come here to preach, to set an example of Krishna consciousness, he was setting the ideal example for us. And he was super regulated in all his activities. He'd rise at the same time, eat at the same time, chant Gayatri at the same time, take bath at the same time, take his massage at the same time. Even though he was traveling constantly, he would go from one place to the next. You know, and back in those days, planes weren't as fast as they are now. You know, I remember when we flew from, when I was a child in 1965, my parents went to Malaysia. And we flew, because planes couldn't fly that far. You can get in a jumbo jet and have one stop going to London these days. But in those days, the planes couldn't fly so far. And we flew from Melbourne to Sydney, from Sydney to Darwin, from Darwin to Singapore, and from Singapore to Penang. That was how you had to do it. Nowadays, you can just go from Melbourne to Butterworth Penang directly, 6 or 7 hours. It took us 2 days. Yeah. So, you know, it's quite a lengthy journey. So, you know, Prabhupada was traveling like that, you know, in these older style planes and stuff like that. And, you know, he was constantly traveling, and yet when he, whenever he arrived at a new place, straight away, he'd be back into his regulation. So to demonstrate for us the need for regulation, right, in devotional service. But Kunti's point is that, she's, this Tvama Kinshana, it means that, materially exhausted means that one is completely done with material desire, completely disgusted with the whole concept of trying to satisfy himself materially. That's what we need to be in order to approach Krishna. This one point of attention, this ekehe guru nandana, Krishna makes this point to Arjuna very strongly in the Gita, is that we need to have this one point of attention. Anything else will not do. Anything else will not get us to the path. Will not get us to the goal. Sorry, not the path. We're on the path. Will not get us to the goal. So if we have any other distractions, and I was speaking to Muchakunda the other day about this, you know, Rupa Goswami, he quotes a very nice verse, Anya abhilashas sunyam jnana kamani anabhittam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. That, you know, that devotional service which has no contamination, no tint of karma or jnana, that is done favorably, this anukul, Devotional service must be favorable for Krishna. It must be for the pleasure of Krishna. Because there's different things. But you can look at, for instance, Yasodamayi, right, who was Krishna's mother. Now, she's chasing Krishna with a stick to beat him. Not necessarily to beat him, but, you know, instill the fear that I'm going to beat you with a stick. Because she never actually did hit him with a stick, but she's chasing him with a stick. So I might say, how is that favorable? She's going to beat the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She must be a demon. One might speculate, you know. But actually, no. What was her desire? What was her motive? Her motive was to train Krishna so he would grow up to be a good person. She was in the role of a mother. She was doing what a mother does. She was training her child. Yet we see personalities like Kamsa. 24 hours a day, as they say in the modern age, 24/7 thinking of Krishna. There was not a moment when he was not thinking of Krishna. Yeah? So one might think, this is pure devotional service. He's constantly engaged in thinking of Krishna. But actually no, because his so-called devotional service was pratikul. It wasn't favorable. Because why? He was thinking of Krishna constantly because he was thinking, oh, this Krishna is going to kill me. I want to kill him first. He had this unfavorable approach. Therefore, his meditation actually led him down, whereas Yasodamayi's, you know, design sort of path took her up because she was doing it favorably for Krishna. So this is the point that Rupa Goswami is making, is like this one point of focus must be favorable, must be for the pleasure of Krishna, otherwise it will not produce the desired success. So we need to see it like that and have this one point of focus upon Krishna. Kama, sense gratification, labhaya, attainment of, he, exactly, smita, is described by great sages. Translation: all occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to the sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Responsively, please. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So we see here that Sukha Goswami is giving us a warning, that he's pointing out that material gains do come from devotional service. And we see that because there's the analogy is often given, is like, you know, up in New Govardhan, I have a garden, or we have a garden. I really like the garden, you know, it's great. I find it very grounding, you know, to have my hands in the dirt and to do things. I really like it. And most days I water the garden, it's, except obviously when it rains, but during the winter up there it's quite dry, you don't get much rain. So I water the garden. And as the plants grow, so do the weeds. And if the plants I want grow, and the weeds grow as well. So, devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna, is like a watering process. So, as you water the bhakti lata, the creeper of bhakti, also the material desires are also becoming apparent. Yeah? So the thing is that he's pointing out here, he's saying that these occupational engagements should never be performed for material gain, and one should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So we perform our activities, but we're not performing our activities to achieve material gain. And we see sometimes it happens that, you know, those engaged in devotional service may become a little bewildered, and they perform their activities to get material gains, to get position, to get, you know, all these different material things which we understand are actually stumbling blocks on the path of devotional service. Or they do get gains and they use that for sense gratification. So the first thing is that we shouldn't be performing our devotional activities to get material gain. And then if material gain does come by its own accord, then we don't take that and use that for sense gratification, because this is actually is a very detrimental and can actually bring about one's downfall in devotional service. Now this section here is quite significant. There's about, what is it, five verses in a row here, starting off with Sarvai Pung Samparo Damo, where Sutta Goswami, he's giving us an understanding of how to achieve satisfaction, or the benefits, the prime benefits that are needed in the human form of life. And then he moves on to verse 7, Vasudeva Bhagavati, where he gives the benefits of devotional service, how one can achieve causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Then in verse 8, he's kind of like giving the glorious devotional service, telling us why we should do it, how we should do it. He's establishing the position of devotional service as supreme. And that's actually what the Bhagavad Gita is doing. It's actually establishing the position of devotional service as being supreme, and the process of devotional service in this age, the chanting of Hare Krishna, as being the supreme process. Then in verse 8, he talks about the occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labour if they don't provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. So he's defining that. Okay, we've got these occupational duties. One may be find themselves situated as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Grihastha. Well, specifically we're talking about Varna here, because occupation refers to the Varna. But so one may be situated as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. What is the use of performing? You can say, well, I'm a Brahmana. Okay, but what's the point of being a Brahmana? What does it mean to be a Brahmana? A Brahmana is one who knows Brahman. Who is Brahman? It's Krishna. So if we don't know Krishna, what is the meaning of being a Brahmana? If we're a Kshatriya, what is the duty of a Kshatriya? The prime duty of a Kshatriya is to ensure that the other Varnas, one of the prime duties, many prime duties of Kshatriya, but one of the prime duties of a Kshatriya is to ensure that the other Varnas are practicing their activities, to see that their activities are focused on Krishna, to also ensure that their activities are focused on Krishna. If they're doing anything else, if they're using their position as a Kshatriya simply to expand their material influence in this world, which history shows many people in the leadership position have done that. They get into a big position in the government, being the leader of a government, a country, whatever like that, and they'll just declare wars on other countries so they can have more and more land. Or they will exploit people. Like this, just like in the Middle East right now, there's a lot of crisis going on with the different governments there. Crises going on with the different governments there. And there's many reports coming about that, whether they're true or not, it's very hard to say, because, how much can you trust the media? But what often happens is when the more powerful governments want to depose someone, they have a smear campaign. They say all these bad things about them, which oftentimes later on is found out to be untrue. Just like with, what was it, the smoking guns in Iran or Iraq or whatever that country was? Saddam Hussein. They were saying there was all these chemical warfare weapons, but they never found one single thing. So it's just a media smear campaign just to get everyone on board so they can go and bomb the country. So they've changed their tactics a little bit now. They're not so obvious with it, but they're still doing the same thing. But if you read the report, if you accept the reports that are there, that these people are in these positions, they're using their occupational engagement as the leader to exploit people to perform so many abominable activities. And okay, maybe it may not be true with these ones, it may be, I don't know. But we can see history shows that many, many people have done this. They get a big position and they misuse that position. It's called an abuse of power. They take that powerful position they have and they use it to exploit others, to increase their wealth or whatever. So when one acts like that, then this actually does not bring about liberation, but brings about bondage. So we need to see this. Constantly, whatever our position is in life, whether we see ourselves as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi, Brahmacharya, whatever we see ourselves in life, we need to be analysing our position, analysing our activities, Am I using these activities for the satisfaction of Krishna? Or am I using these activities simply to expand my sense gratification, to expand my influence, whatever? This we need to do. If we are really interested in going back to Godhead. If you have some other business here, if you have some other motive, then that's okay, just do what you want. But if you're serious about going back to Godhead, which I believe that most people in ISKCON are, then we need to carefully analyze ourselves every day to see the activities I performed today. Were they focused on my development in Krishna consciousness, or was I actually trying to simply expand my influence, expand my sense enjoyment, you know, etc. in this material world? And, you know, different Vaishnava groups, I think I've mentioned this before, in deity worship, specifically in devotional service, there's a term called Panchanga Bhakti in devotion in five divisions. And this is specifically relates to deity worship, but also it can expand into the greater realm of devotional service. But there's five divisions there. There's Upadan, Abhigamana, Upadan, Yoga, Ija, Swadhyaya. So Abhigamana means preparing for worship. It means, like, you know, you get up in the morning, you take bath, you clean your room, you make sure your clothes are clean, stuff like that. You know, just creating a good consciousness. Upadan means gathering items for worship, such as the paraphernalia we use for worship, you know, the garlands, the flowers, the incense, lamps, etc., the bulk offerings, even, you know, preparing, not really preparing, but it could be preparing, but not really. So gathering all the items for worship. Then yoga, in Gaudiya Vaishnava terms, it generally indicates meditating upon the form of the Lord before you worship that form. In Sri Vaishnava understandings of it, it's the yoga is the meditation you do at the end of the day, so that you're reflecting upon what you have done that day and contemplate, you know, how was this advancing myself in devotional service? How was this focus on? Look at your activities of the day and assess them to see, were these activities fruitful for bhakti or not? And how can I improve? And then the next day we go about improving. There needs to be, you know, I remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj telling me years ago, we need to be constantly turning up the heat on ourselves, not on others. The tendency is we'll turn up the heat on others and just back off, you know, because I want an easy life. And therefore we see that, you know, we chastise other people, we get heavy on them and stuff like that. But actually that's not our business. Get heavy on yourself, push yourself. You need to be merciful to others. You need to be tolerant with others' shortcomings and things like that. But we need to increase the pressure on ourselves. We need to be very... Not that we... not self-critical, you know, or not, you know, like sometimes you see people are always sort of down on themselves, or to use a term, they beat themselves up all the time. Oh, I'm this, I'm that, they're, you know, going on like that. But actually we need to be very candid with ourselves, very honest with ourselves, and look at ourselves carefully to see where I really am at in the stage of devotional service. And there's books like Madhurya Kadambini, for instance, or that's by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, or there's a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think it's called the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. I'm not 100% sure on that, because there's two books I often get mixed up. But I think it's called the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, where he analyzes the different anarthas and devotional service. So with Madhurya Kadambini, it's very minutely analyzing the stages of advancement in devotional service and the pitfalls to look out for. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is also giving the same analysis. So this analysis is very handy because it helps us to look at where we are in devotional service and look at the things we need to work on improving. So it is important that we, you know, are able to assess our situation with a view, not with a view to criticizing ourselves, but with a view to progressing in devotional service. So we see here that Sutta Goswami is giving a very clear analysis. I mean, it's a brief analysis, but he's actually pointing out quite clearly, what devotional service is for. So we need to know this. Then in this verse, he points out the same point again. He says that, you know, all occupational engagement, whatever it is you're doing, whatever you see yourself as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they only have this one point. And it's saying here that there's Dharma Ekantasya. You know, they only have this, the Dharma has one point, has one goal, one end, and that is the satisfaction of Krishna. So if your occupational duties are doing anything else, you're missing the point. It's not meant for sense gratification. It's not meant for expanding our material influence. It's not meant for becoming a big man or woman or whatever. It's meant for the pleasure of Krishna. And that's, you know, that's a very wide thing also, because the pleasure of Krishna doesn't necessarily mean that we're getting so many things done. We're opening temples, we're distributing books. You know, these are just statistics after all. What it means is a very broad thing. It also includes, you know, how we're interacting with devotees. You know, like, okay, you may be the biggest book distributor in the temple. How many devotees did you offend getting to that point? How many, you know, let's say, non-devotees on the street did you burn out? You know, I've been in temples where like, you know, the biggest book distributor, he's out in the street, and he's a very determined book distributor, but the temple's getting phone calls from people, you know, complaining about the way he distributes the books, complaining about, you know, he took the money from my daughter, he bullied my daughter into giving him money for this book, and now she's crying and I'm upset. And is that positive? Is that a positive outcome? No, because, like, okay, they took a book, but did they read the book? Are they appreciating the philosophy? Are they ready to make a change in their life? See, this is, you know, okay, it's very nice to distribute lots of books, and yes, people certainly do get a benefit from holding the book, from touching a transcendental piece of literature. There's no doubt of that. Do they get more benefit from reading it? What do you think? Do they get more benefit if they think this is true? Do they get more benefit if they start to think, I want to take this as my life? I want to make these the guiding principles of my life? Is that more benefit than if they just get it and hold it and then throw it in the bin? Yeah. Of course they're going to get more benefit doing that. So we need to look at, you know, try and have this broader perspective and not just be looking for the short-term result, because there's Shreyas and there's Prayas. So short-term result means prayas. Something very short-term. It doesn't last. Shreyas is what we're interested in. We're interested in long-term benefits. We're interested in going back to Godhead. But not just me going back to Godhead, but as many people as possible. The whole universe, we want to go back to Godhead. This is the mood of a preacher. So we need to ensure that with our occupational engagement, whatever it is we're doing, we're not just looking at statistics, we're not just trying to impress people with how much Lakshmi I collected or how many books I distributed. What we're trying to do is to cultivate our relationship with Krishna. And Krishna says at the end of the Gita that person who preaches this message of Bhagavad Gita to others is the most dear person to me, and there will never be a person more dear to me than that person. So it doesn't mean you go around and you beat people on the head with the Bhagavad Gita and tell them you're wrong, you're a demon and this and that and that. It means that you convince them by your argument, reasoning, logic, whatever it is you're using, you convince them that this is the path to follow. Yeah? And they actually take that. They believe that. So it's actually quite it's not an easy thing to do. But we've seen many great Vaishnavas who are fully capable of doing that. That they, you know, they speak, you know, I mean, you know, I've seen devotees, you know, on the street leading Harinam, and, you know, I mean, I've led Harinam myself on the streets, you know, but I've seen other, you know, and none of the non-devotees chant unless it's to deride us, but I've seen, you know, devotees leading Harinam on the streets, and they get drunkards up and dancing, they get all sorts of people up dancing, chanting the holy names. That's a person who has an ability. That's a person who is actually, As Lord Chaitanya says, what's that? There's a really nice verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It just escapes me right now. He points out how the chanting of the holy name is the Kali Kalela Dhamma Nama Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti Vinanahi Tara Pravatan. Very nice verse. That this is the Harinam, this is the Yuga Dharma. The process of this age. And he says, only one who has been blessed by an energy of Krishna, by Shakti of Krishna, can actually get others to chant. So, actually, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, there's a discussion in the Sarata Darshini, how he points out that anyone who's a great preacher, we can actually understand has been blessed by a Shakti of Krishna. So in a small way, they're a Shaktivesh. They've been given this Shakti of Krishna in order to carry out this service. As Mahaprabhu says, Krishna Shakti Vinanahi. Unless they have the Shakti of Krishna, Vinanahi, they can't do it. Yeah? But if they have the Shakti of Krishna, then they can give Krishna to others. So that's the thing. And how do we become qualified to be able to give the Shakti of Krishna? By following the process of devotional service very purely. It's not that anyone can propagate Krishna consciousness. It takes some ability, and that ability we need to understand comes from Krishna. So the idea is to make ourselves a suitable repository for this Shakti of Krishna, so we get blessed with this Shakti of Krishna. And then we can see, you look at someone like Srila Prabhupada, one single person, keep this in mind, one single person, look what he achieved. How many temples did he open? How many disciples did he have? How many people did he bring to Krishna consciousness? How many books did he distribute? How much prasadam did he distribute? One single person. And our whole society can't do that. Our whole society of tens of thousands of devotees cannot do as much as Prabhupada did. One single person. So what does that mean? That he was blessed by a Shakti of Krishna to be able to achieve that. Because only Krishna can do things like that. But that's not to minimize Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada was blessed by the Shakti of Krishna because of his greatness as a devotee. It's not that anyone can become blessed like that. So it is the glory of Prabhupada that Krishna manifested through him. It's a true sign of Prabhupada's greatness that Krishna manifested through him like that. And that's why he was able to achieve so much. I mean, look at what he did, you know. From 1965 to 1977. Just barely 11 years, actually, because 66 was when ISKCON was incorporated. 11 years. Look how much he achieved. And in the years since Prabhupada has left, 1977 to 2011, how much have we achieved? If you're taking from Prabhupada going from zero to what he went to, and we take from where Prabhupada left it to where it is now, you know, if we have extended on the same thing, there should be a temple in every town and village of the world. There should be millions and millions and millions of devotees if we had kept on the same exponential tangent that Prabhupada's established. But we can't, because we don't have that degree of purity yet. It's not to say we can't do it, but we don't have that. So, yeah, very important thing, I think, to understand. So, and then in the last section, last verse on this, he says, life desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. Because why? If we're directed towards sense gratification, it gives us an animal birth. Because the animals are meant for these things. As it points out in the Hitopadesh, it says, I can't even remember the translation. Essentially, it's pointing out that the activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, these are activities common to both men and animals. But the animals focus on these activities. That's their business, is simply to eat, to sleep, to mate, defend. You look at any animal, dogs, you know, that's all they're interested in, is eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But this is actually not the business of a human being. A human being, it says, dharma hina pashupi shamana. Dharma adiko bishesho. This bishesho means like a special quality. Adiko, the one special quality of a human being is dharma. That's what the human form of life is meant for. As it says in the very first verse of the Vedanta Sutra, Atatha Brahma Gigyasa. Now you have the human form of life, use it for what it's meant for. It's meant for inquiring about dharma, not meant for any other purpose. If you use it for any other purpose, you're missing the point. Yeah? And we see so many people use the human form of life for eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's not what human form of life's about. These are necessities, but not the goal, not the business of the human form of life. This is what animals do. So if you want to do just that, fine, be an animal. Take an animal birth. Then you'll be able to do your occupational duties with the appropriate body. You know, if you like, you know, sex life. I mean, so many people are just interested in sex life. It's their only occupation. You know, they want to do it as many times as possible in a day. But the thing is, in a human form of life, how many times can you do it in a day? 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5. If you want to do it more than that, a pigeon has a very good body for that. A pigeon can do it 20, 30, 40, 50 times in an hour. So if that's your desire to do sex life so much, then fine, have a pigeon body. Yeah? If you want to eat anything, you don't care what you eat. Human form of life is not meant for that. Human form of life is meant to have discrimination about what we eat. But if you don't care, it's all right, I'll eat this, I'll eat that, I don't care. Pig body, because the pig body is just suited to that. If you want to be run very fast, you know, I mean, I can go on with so many analogies, you know. But we can see, like, you know, there are animals, like there's a cheetah in the animal world can run 70 or 80 miles an hour. Very, very fast animal. So if a person, their whole goal of life is to break the record for the fastest runner, that's not what your life is meant for. But you can do that in a cheetah. You can run faster than any other living entity on the planet. Yeah? You can fly faster than any other living entity on the planet. Get a bird body. Yeah? There's those birds that go into the dive and they swoop and they get, you know, like small birds on the ground, small animals on the ground. When they dive, they're going well over 150 mile an hour. So if you want stuff like that, you know, get up with your hang glider and do these big dives and stuff, you know, take a bird body. You can do it perfectly. But it's not what human life is for. Human form of life is meant for inquiring about Dharma, meant for practicing the activities of devotional service, not for anything else. So the point he's making here is that don't direct your desires towards sense gratification. Don't direct your desires towards being, you know, this thing, that thing. Direct your desires towards the satisfaction of Krishna. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. As Prabhupada would say, we do whatever is necessary to keep body and soul together so we can serve Krishna. So if you need to do exercise, you know, Prabhupada would go walking. You know, if that's what you need to do, then do that. If you need to do yoga, do that. But don't become a yogi. Don't become a jogger or a runner or this or that. That's not what life's about. There are so many people doing that. And where's it getting them? It's getting them further bondage in the material world. Your human form of life is meant for inquiring about the absolute truth. That's what it's about. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now you have the human form of life, you inquire about Brahman. Atato, therefore, Brahma Jigyasa, inquire. Gigya, to inquire, to know. Atato Brahma, Brahman. The Supreme Lord. And it means the nature of the Supreme Lord, the nature of the self, because the Lord is Parabrahman. Yeah? And then there's the self, which is also Brahman, and there's the material nature, which is also Brahman. This is defined in the Bhagavad Gita. So this is actually the business of the human form of life. Nothing, and it says here, nothing else should be the goal of one's works. So these five verses here are very clearly spelling out for us in no uncertain terms what is the ultimate goal, how to practice it, and what we should avoid. And if we can follow this, then we'll achieve the success of Krishna consciousness. We'll achieve the success of going back home, back to Godhead. I'll read Srila Prabhupada's purport. We have already discussed that pure devotional service to the Lord is automatically followed by perfect knowledge and detachment from material existence. But there are others who consider that all kinds of different occupational engagements, including those of religion, are meant for material gain. The general tendency, and this is actually, you know, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, this is actually a karmi. It's someone who performs their dharma to get sense gratification. They perform the dharma with a desire of sense gratification. They get the sense gratification, then they go back to dharma again. Then they perform their activities for sense gratification. They get the desired object of sense gratification. Then they go back to dharma. So it's very much, just a cycle of material gain. They worship the Lord so they can get some gain. They get that gain. They enjoy that gain. They go back. They worship the Lord some more. So it's just like, you know, it's just very materialistic actually. Because they're just after some gain. The general tendency of an ordinary man in any part of the world is to gain some material profit in exchange for religious or other occupational service. And, you know, often we see devotees will target Christians for this. Because it's that line in the Lord's Prayer when the devotees tend to like to pull that out and say, well, give us this day our daily bread. I don't know if that's necessarily the most accurate, because the idea, as I understand with the Lord's Prayer, is that we're taking shelter of the Lord, exclusively, that He's my only means of sustenance, which is very much in accordance with our Vaishnava view. But we see in all religions that people take shelter of the religious process simply for material gain. That's their motivation. And of course, we will see in Christianity that people do that. They will take shelter of the process of Christianity for material gain. But we also see in every other religious practice that people take shelter of the process for material gain. Even within ISKCON, we see that people are taking shelter of the process for religious gain. They might come and join ISKCON because they want to get a wife or a husband. Or they come to the ashram and see so many pretty girls in the ashram. Oh, maybe I'll become a devotee and I'll get married to one of them. Or vice versa, the girls say, oh, so many nice men, I'll become a devotee so I can get a husband. That's taking shelter of devotional service and material gain. So, it's not first class. But at least they're taking shelter of devotional service. We need to keep this in perspective also. It says, says in 2.3.10, Bhagavatam ākāma sāvakāma vā mokṣakāma dharādihīti vṛṇā bhakti yogena yajetakuraṣaṁ param. That whether one is full of material desires, without material desires, or desiring liberation, one should by all means, tivrena, with great force, take shelter of the Supreme Person of the Godhead. Yeah? So, okay, it's not ideal that we're taking shelter of a religious process with some material gain, but at least we're taking shelter of a religious process. That's the beginning. Then we need to move beyond that. We need to see that I have to give up this desire for material gain. Just like we see with Dhruva Maharaj. Yeah, he approached the Lord. He went to the forest, prayed on the Mall Bhagavate Vasudeva, and with Tivrena, great force, he was meditating upon Krishna. Then when Krishna appeared, there's a verse, I think it's recorded in the Hari Bhangsa, I don't really remember. And it's talking about Dhruva Maharaj, no, Hari Bhakti Sudhodaya, not Hari Bhangsa, Hari Bhakti Sudhodaya, it's recorded. How when Dhruva, when Krishna appeared, and like when Vishnu appeared to Dhruva, he was stunned and he couldn't speak, and then he touched him with the conch. And then he actually was able to compose elegant poetry. And then he said to the Lord that, my Lord, upon seeing you, he said, my Lord, I was only praying for broken pieces of glass, but upon seeing you, I have achieved the most valuable gem. He actually realized that material desire is a useless thing. I mean, you walk around the city, especially Sydney. Melbourne's not so much, but in Sydney around King's Cross, broken glass everywhere. And who cares for it? You just make sure you don't stand on it so you don't cut your feet. But who cares for it, really? It's useless stuff. But that's the point that he's making. It's like all these material desires were just simply broken glass on the street. But now that I've got you, I've got the most valuable gem. So that's the point. It's that, to avoid, okay, one may approach with material desire. Good, you've approached. Right, let's get past that now. Let's get past material desire. Let's understand that these material desires will not help us achieve the goal of life. Yeah? Only this pure bhakti. So, even in the Vedic literatures, for all sorts of religious performances, an allurement of material gain is offered, and most people are attracted by such allurements or blessings of religiosity. See, it's there. These, I mean, there was this, I don't know if you ever saw that Red Ecology book. So in this Red Ecology book, it was talking about all the benefits of following these different ecologies. So it was very much a karma kanda presentation. Because you do this ecology, you'll get this material benefit. You can do this ecology, you get that material benefit. But what's the benefit of ecology, really? Bhakti. That's why we follow ecology. I mean, who cares if we go to this planet or that planet or we get strong body or whatever it's offering? Who really cares about that? Materialistic people. But the devotees, no, the devotees aren't interested. We want to satisfy Krishna. Why are such so-called men of religion allured by material gain? Because material gain can enable one to fulfill desires, which in turn satisfies sense gratification. Yeah? And this cycle of occupational engagements includes so-called religiously followed... this cycle of occupational engagements includes so-called religiosity, followed by material gain, and material gain followed by fulfillment of desires, and then they go back into this religiosity, as I was saying, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says. It's a cycle. They just go through this whole cycle. religiosity, material gain, satisfaction, desires. Religiosity, material gain, satisfaction, desires. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. There's no end to it. Sense gratification is the general way for all sorts of fully occupied men. But in the statement of Sutta Goswami, as per the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam, this is nullified by the present sloka. One should not engage himself in any sort of occupational service for material gain only. Nor should material gain be utilized for sense gratification. How material gain should be utilized is described as follows. And then, you know, he pointed out how it should be only directed towards inquiry for the absolute truth. Okay, so we'll finish there. Any questions at all?
One comment. The Prabhupada says the materialist non devotee, all the plans will fail unless they take shelter.
Same for the devotees. It'll all fail if we don't take shelter of Krishna. But if we take shelter of Krishna, it'll have success. And even if the success is not what we expect it will be, or not what we're desiring, you know, sometimes you may take shelter of Krishna and we say, well, I want this, I want that, you know. What's that prayer you often chant from Bhakti Tirthamrita? Do you remember that? Yeah. But like Bhakti Tirthamrita, this is prayer that my wife has recorded from one of Bhakti Tirthamrita's lectures. It's a very nice prayer that he's praying to the Lord. And he's saying, you know, my Lord, give me humility, and then you give me challenging people to deal with, or something like that. You know, it's like he's praying for all these different things, but what he gets back in return is not exactly what he prayed for. But in the end, he realizes, you know, I was asking for so many things, you know, I wanted so much, but you gave me what I needed in order to achieve that. So it may not necessarily come the way we think it should come. But Krishna takes care of what we need. And that's what we need to see. It's like Krishna is there to provide us with the appropriate avenues so we can achieve God realization. And, you know, as long as we're, as Krishna himself says in the 15th chapter, Savasya Chaham Hridi Matasmiti Gyanam Aponam Cha. He says that, you know, I'll give them. For those who want to approach me, I give them intelligence, give them knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So if someone wants to understand Krishna, he gives them knowledge. If someone wants to remember Krishna, he gives them remembrance. If someone wants to be an atheist, he gives them forgetfulness. So Krishna is making that arrangement for us so that we can approach him. But if we want material desires, then he makes the arrangement so we can forget him. And how many people have we seen come and go? Because they have another desire. They go because they have another desire. And of course, you know, we also need to take a degree of responsibility there, because we haven't created an ideal environment for them to increase their remembrance. Because, you know, devotional service is all about sangha. The key of devotional service is sangha. So if we have good sangha, good association, then that enhances or inspires us to remember Krishna. But if we had bad association, that creates obstacles for us. So especially for younger devotees, it's important that we give them good association so that they're inspired to remember about Krishna. They think that the devotees are the nicest people in the world. Yeah? If they think like that, then they're not going to go. You know, if I'm thinking, you know, that, you know, a certain person is the nicest person in the world, how could I even contemplate going somewhere else or seeking association elsewhere? So, yeah. Yeah. So it's a nice prayer. You know, he's actually so many things he wanted, but then he received what he needed in order to achieve those things. Because it's like, you know, like a lot Malati often says is that, you know, people, I don't know if any of you know Malati, she's quite an extraordinary devotee. Been through a lot of challenges in life, and still she's dedicated to Prabhupada. And she has made the observation that a lot of people are just after cheap blessings. But that's not why we approach Krishna for cheap blessings. Because we see, you know, people go to Lord Shiva, they get a cheap blessing, they go away, you know. But actually, our goal or our purpose should be to approach Krishna to get the very needs of our life fulfilled. And it's actually the need of our life to become Krishna conscious, because we are eternal part and parcel of Krishna. So we need to remember that. We need to develop that understanding and act accordingly. And by approaching Krishna, that will be achieved. But we need to understand, what is the Swartha Kathim? What is the goal? Is to go to Vishnu, Krishna. But material endeavors won't help us there. Okay, anything else? Abhigamana, Upadan, Yoga, Ija, Swadhyaya. Ija means worship. And Swadhyaya means study the Shastra and also chanting of Gayatri. Again, all focused, this is called Panchanga Bhakti, it's all focused on Krishna. That's our life should be to simply focus on Krishna. I rise early in the morning to worship Krishna. I go to bed early at night so I can rise early in the morning to worship Krishna. I go to bed at night reading Krishna books so I can think of Krishna. Everything focused around Krishna. And Prabhupada says if we do that, then, you know, if we structure our lives in such a way that we can't help but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, when it comes to the point of death, who will we think of? Krishna. Because he becomes indebted to it. Like, you've given your whole life to me? What's he going to do? He's going to give us that remembrance. Prabhupada, one time devotees were asking about that. That, you know, how will we remember Lord Chaitanya? And he said that, you know, even if you can't remember the Lord at the moment of death, Lord Chaitanya will force himself into your consciousness if you've given this life to Krishna. So he's very kind. You know, he reciprocates. He's not cruel. He reciprocates with us fully. Well, there's an interesting comment or statement, Bengali statement, Plena Parichyate. You judge a thing by its result. Yeah? So I think that could be very applicable here in this situation. It's okay, how do you discriminate what's material, what's spiritual? What is the ultimate goal of your desire? Are you the center of that, or is Krishna the center of that? Because there's also a statement Prabhupada quotes quite regularly from where Krishnadas Kaviraj is explaining the difference between love and lust. I come into the apriti. I can't remember the whole verse, but essentially what he's saying is that love means satisfaction of Krishna's senses. Lust means satisfaction of my senses. That's how you discriminate, and you have to be very candid with yourself. You have to see: am I just kidding myself that this is aimed at Krishna, or is this really aimed at Krishna? You know, and we can understand this through the Shastras. We need to read Prabhupada's books. We need to study Prabhupada's books. Listen to, you know, if you don't have time to study Prabhupada's books, you're too busy during the day, get an iPod, listen to Prabhupada's lectures. You know, Prabhupada, what he's speaking is the absolute truth. There's no doubt of it. He speaks so clearly. You know, don't take my word for it. Anything I say, you don't have to listen to what I say. Listen to Prabhupada. Read Prabhupada. He's got no material desire. He's not trying to mislead you. He's not trying to exploit you in any way. He's simply trying to give you Krishna. So just listen to Prabhupada and you'll see. Prabhupada explains it so clearly. How to understand if it's focused on Krishna? How to understand if it's focused on me? That's really the litmus test. Just see, am I the beneficiary here? The main beneficiary here, or is it Krishna? But even if we analyze our activities and we find, oh, actually I'm doing this for myself, don't start thinking, oh, I should give up. No, the fact that you're here in ISKCON, the fact that you're here practicing devotional service, that is very good. That is a beginning. And from there, go forward. From there, improve. But we need to be very, you know, conscious. It's like, I remember years ago in Vrindavan, one of Tamal Krishnamurti's, I used to get the opportunity to serve him quite regularly in Vrindavan. And one of his servants had inadvertently locked all the, because the house had two doors. There was the main door and there was the kitchen door. And what happened was the cooks used to come in, because there was a lock on the outside of the kitchen door, and the cooks used to come in through the kitchen door to cook lunch for him. And the devotee who was cleaning would lock the main door with a lock on the outside. But this devotee who was cleaning him one day inadvertently locked the kitchen door from the inside, then went out and locked the main door so the cook couldn't get in and cook his lunch. So anyone who knows Tamal Krishnamurti knew that he was very particular about his prasadam. It had to be cooked just right, the right time, everything like that. He's a perfectionist in that area. In many areas he's a perfectionist. And so this day the devotee was cleaning, inadvertently locked the door so the cook couldn't get in. Maharaj was quite upset, so he sent me around. He said, bring them here. I wanted to speak to them now. So I went and got the devotee and they came and spoke to him. And Maharaj made a point which stuck in my mind really strongly ever since then. He said, before you become Krishna conscious, you have to become conscious. So we need to be conscious of our activities. We need to understand what it is we're doing. Don't just like blindly go through life and thinking it's all great, you know, because you could be standing on so many people's toes. You could be offending so many people. You could be making so many mistakes. Be aware of what you're doing. Analyze it in the perspective of the Shastra. And then adjust accordingly. In perspective of, you know, Guru Sadhu Shastra. You inquire from the spiritual master, you know, in the Shastra it says this, I'm doing it like this, please give me some guidance. You know, inquire from the sadhus. When the sadhus visit, you know, get devotees like Banu Swami, very, very amazing devotee. Yeah. Many amazing devotees who have great insight into this process of Krishna consciousness can help us advance. And especially also our guru, but you know, Prabhupada and the Shastra. The Shastra gives us great insight. So by taking shelter of these things, we'll actually, you know, be able to advance more. So that's essentially it. As you see, you know, is it aimed at Krishna? If it is, that's spiritual. If it's aimed at me, that's material. It's as simple as that. Sorry, I'm not following your question. Yeah, Krishna or Rama? Krishna is better.
Because I just remember when Mahatma Gandhi said Hare Rama when he died.
Who?
Mahatma Gandhi.
Uh-huh.
And he said, whenever I was scared, I just used to read Bhagavad Gita.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada didn't have such a good impression of Mahatma Gandhi. He thought he was quite materialistic because he ultimately didn't accept Krishna. He actually said, Mahatma Gandhi, according to Prabhupada, said that the Bhagavad Gita was mythological. Yeah, but he didn't believe it. He read it, but he didn't believe it. He didn't believe that Krishna was a real person. He thought these were mythological, you know, like allegorical. He thought, you know, but he didn't actually accept that Krishna was a real person.
And he did say Hare Rama at the last word.
I don't know. I don't know. I can't comment on it. But if someone does chant the Lord's name at the moment of death, then yes, they will, Krishna says, you know, whatever state of consciousness you achieve when you leave this body, that state you attain in your next life. So, you know, if one quits their body remembering Krishna, which Krishna also says, Yanti Deva Praha Deva Pitru Yanti, that one who quits his body remembering me, he achieves me. So if he did do that, which I don't know, I can't comment on that, but I can comment on the Shastra, is that if a person does leave their body remembering Krishna, he'll go to Krishna. Krishna says that in the ninth chapter of the Gita. Okay? Thank you so much. Kantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki Samaveta Bhakti Rindiki Jai Nitai Go Premanandi Haribo.